and welcome to Nerds of the Old Republic, the nerdy podcast where we read and listen to and watch nerdy things, and sometimes we wear gas masks while we are podcasting because of unnamed individuals. I'm Adam.
I'm Mike. We just mixed up the order tonight.
We just did Sean.
I'm Sean.
Sean just looked over. Mike was like, you go.
Sean's just sitting over there looking a little guilty.
Yeah, just trying not to laugh, but it's not working. Yeah.
Well, this is cast number two of the night, so we're going to be a little faster, a little looser with it. So it's appropriate to start off that way. We are talking about Ray Naylor's The Mountain in the Sea. And I think I have fallen into this trope character of myself where I pick books whose characters' names I can't pronounce. Because the three-body problem was where this originated, I think, with Shixin Liu, which is a good callback, by the way. If you haven't listened to our three-body problem episode, you should go listen to it because Netflix has released the episodes.
Shows out.
And people say it's good. I can't watch them. I can't. After reading the book, I just have no interest.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of countless shows where I'm like, oh, I'll have to watch that. And then I just, like, who has time for TV?
Yeah. Who has time for a show I already read the book in? And I won't spoil it for you, but you kind of already know where I'm leaning in our reviews.
True.
But I couldn't pronounce the characters there. And Ray Naylor's The Mountain in the Sea is going to be worse, actually, because the names are not of a specific like nationality origin that I can like lean on my schema to pronounce.
So it's not Norman Mailer.
No, not Norman Mailer.
We
sent Sean on a snipe hunt.
Very different book if Norman Mailer had written it. Yeah. We should be able to pronounce Dr. Ha, at least. I assume H-A is Ha.
I think
Ha. God, that gave me so many problems when I first started reading, thinking of saying he. But then I had to look closer because I don't have readers yet. I'm old enough for them. And I'm like, it's Ha. Ha.
Are you laughing at yourself the second time? No, I'm just kidding. Before we get too deep into the book, though, because there will be many butchered pronunciations and much criticism, we have fallen into a nice tradition here where Sean surprises Mike and I with a beer that he's brought for the second cast.
My favorite tradition.
Yes.
Oh, you flatter me, gentlemen.
What did you bring for us? And would you mind reading the tasting notes, sir?
I would not. I searched. I searched low. And I searched high in the coolers trying to find a beer that I could associate with either of our casts tonight. Mm-hmm. I was looking for something with an octopus on the can because I'm thinking to myself, well, I mean, duh.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, how hard could it be? I went to Consumers, Wegmans. No one's got a fucking octopus beer anywhere. So if you're out there, brewers, give us an octopus beer.
Honestly,
you could corner the market on.
Use eight kinds of hops or something?
We said it was not octopuses.
I prefer octopodes, but octopuses is the other acceptable plural.
Or cephalopods, if you want to use something else, like one of those cuttlefish or something. Sure, whatever. Yeah. I don't know. So I couldn't find anything that I could remotely relate to this. No androids, no that
human slave
false
ships?
Face thing, no human slave, nothing! So I gave up on that idea, and I'm like, well, maybe I can find something spicy. Mm-hmm. Looking for spicy stuff. Spicy beer. I'm like, they've got to have spicy beers. It's a thing.
Yeah.
I find one beer that has the name or the word spicy in it, and it's fucking like $10 more per ounce than any other beer on the shelf. I'm like, I love you guys, but I know. So
long story short, Sean brought a six-pack of Mick Ultra.
Well, I did my usual and I just bought whatever fucking tickled my feelings at the time. And I'm like, well, this one says peanut butter chocolate and this one says stout and this one says this.
I like where this is going.
Yeah.
But then I found something that I thought for sure was what I thought it was. And it looked hilarious. The can literally made me go like that in the store because I thought it was a picture of a bear shitting in the woods on the can. I grab it. I go to the front to buy the cans and whatever. I put it up on the thing and I look at it as I'm getting out my wallet and it's a bear riding a bicycle in the woods.
Maybe
still,
better.
Still amusing.
Yeah.
Yes, but not the same level of amusement. So I looked at it and I was like, all right, I'm not putting it back. I'll just buy it. And away I went. So I got you guys for our enjoyment this evening from Brickyard Brewing Company.
Oh, that's
Flat Brim Hat. It's a triple IPA with honey.
Ooh.
Nice.
which has nothing to do with anything we've read.
But I can see why you think they're shitting.
It totally looks like that thing you said you thought it looked like.
Yeah.
Is also, this in Lewiston or...
I think it's, if it's Brickyard Bar, it's the barbecue place in Lewiston, as far as I know, but...
Brewed in Camden, Lewiston, yeah.
Yeah, Lewiston, yep.
Yes, cool. And Mike, you get the extra beer for hosting?
Yeah, definitely.
Well, we'll leave it there in case anyone plows through theirs and wants to have at.
But I really
can I tell you how much I appreciate you, though, Sean, because I know how much you love IPAs.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. With IPAs, sir.
I brought you something I thought you guys would like this IPA. Time.
Ooh, and that 10% IBV or ABV just caught my attention.
Yeah. This is going to be a sipper for those of us who have to drive home.
So, I'll be sleeping in the studio this evening.
You don't want the government warning, right? You want the tasting notes?
Preferably.
Actually, it'd be kind of funny if one day you were like,
I think warning. I tried that once. And
you pregnant women.
I couldn't keep a straight face. All right. Flat Brim Hat is the name.
So as Sean is reading, make sure viewers or listeners at home are picturing a bear that appears to be shitting into the basket on the back of its, what do you call that kind of bike?
Oh, penny farthing.
Yeah, there penny farthing. Yeah.
Oh, you get a bell for Thank that. You. Nice.
Hey, we'll share it.
Oh, not a fan of the old timey bikes, are you?
See? And it looks, get on this with your hoop skirt.
It's got a honey pot or something in the basket on that the bear is shitting into, but he is wearing a flat brim hat.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the name of the beer. All right.
Sometimes called the snapback.
Oh, I thought that was a helmet. You're right. That is a hat.
Flat brim hat for all you. I don't know. Who wears flat brim hats? Dude bros?
It's actually the thing now.
It's not just
now.
Chads or Giga Chads. It's
Giga Chads. All right. Thank you.
Yep.
That's our connection. Somehow Giga Chads are represented in this book.
We can make this happen, yeah.
The one guy who's the programmer, he's a Giga Chad.
That's not how the word Giga Chad's used. In
oh, never before. Mind. Okay. Let for I don't know. Baby Momo. All right. Honey balanced body. Baking for an easy drinking beer. Nelson Sanveen. Hope. Fuck. Okay.
Sorry. Scott, he's getting this cold. Give him a break.
Honey balanced body. Making for an easy drinking beer. Nelson Sauvin hops shine with galaxy for tropical depth. There. Tropical depth, motherfuckers. Tropical There's your connection. Yes.
There.
Brood.
We just the fuck out of that.
That's right. We made that work. That's what the red door means, kids.
I feel like Adam would know how to or be able to tell us something about this particular hop, which I've not heard of.
Nelson Sauvin. I actually don't know anything about
it. No, okay.
It.
I didn't mean to put you on the spot.
Sorry. It sounds Australian.
Yeah.
Galaxy, I know for sure. That's like an OG IPA hop.
Okay.
High alpha acids.
It is a triple IPA, which you guys know is like not my thing, but I did it for you.
All right. Thank you, Sean.
You're welcome.
Let's open them.
Prost.
Skål.
Slantja.
Yeah, I was going to go there.
Are we all Irish here?
I am not Irish in the least, as far as I know.
Well, what have we covered so far?
I thought your last name was a good Irish name.
Yeah, it
the
is.
The ski at the end?
Yeah, I almost added myself there.
Have we done German and Irish so far? And
yeah.
The other thing I am is Greek, and they say, opa. So,
opa.
Yeah, we've covered it. All mine.
It's beautiful. It's got good head retention.
I love the smell, and I'm not even like...
Citrusy. Mm-hmm. Looks like a beer.
I can smell a little of that like tropical note there, like just from the smell. Like there's a, I don't know if that's pineapple or.
It reminds me of the islands off the coast of Vietnam. So I mean, for sure, it's great time.
If I had to be specific, I would say the Con Dao Islands.
Oh, that's a good, yes, very, very good.
I think so,
and that's definitely one of those Vietnamese bears on that. That
does look like island. A comrade bear.
I had a few too many of this exact beer one night when I was ended up in a local brothel and I ended up.
Whoa, where the hell is this going?
No, then next thing I knew, I was on a ship for a while.
Oh, that's where it's going.
That was gonna be like a Jay Peterman story here or something.
Oh, no.
I glanced across the brothel and I saw her wearing it. I had to have it. A silk scarf.
Nothing floral else entices print. Me. All right. Well. We've got it poured. It looks fantastic for those of you in the area because you're
heady.
In New York State probably to get this.
Yeah, Lewiston Brewery, their Brickyard. Mm-hmm. So there you go.
All right. Good wings.
Indeed. Oh, yeah. Brickyard.
It's so heady, I can't drink it.
Not going to stop me.
That's as a triple IPA should be. That's good. If you like IPAs, I'm looking at Sean.
I can't get past the head.
Oh, that's good.
The foam, it's like beer blocking me.
That's really good.
Could you pass me a paper towel when you have a chance? Please. Thank you.
There you are. Like I would like to drink many of these while sitting outside in the sun.
Yeah. That's an IPA, right?
Book in my one hand.
It's not terrible.
A smoker, 6 to 8 feet away, perhaps.
It doesn't have
tunes on.
I'm feeling weird. It doesn't have the typical hoppiness that really bothers me, but it's the it almost tastes kind of like an unfiltered wheat beer in a way.
Triple IPA is going to be so dank, as the kids say, that it is going to taste like it's unfiltered.
Is it the dankest of the dank?
This is not the stickiest of the icky that I've had, but those are all adjectives used to describe triple IPAs. Hmm. Dank, sticky, green, resiny, pine.
I aspire to be known as dank in some ways. Yeah. Maybe this is like a dank cast. I don't know. Like,
if this were 2019, yes, indeed.
It could be. Are we dank hosts?
We are now because we're old.
Dank. I always thought dank meant like skank. Like that, like old and crusty and kind of moldy. And
that's literally the definition, isn't it? Like,
I thought so.
Moist, damp, and moldy.
Yeah, like that dank basement, you know?
Yes. Yeah. When the students started using it, I'm like, you guys know that memes can't be moist, right? And moldy. Why are you talking about moldy, moist memes?
That word sounds negative.
That's right. It's got a negative connotation, and you don't, doesn't mean what you think it means.
Whatever it comes up, though, that like, all these stupid slang and all the stupid usage of, and the whole English is falling apart. I'm like, it's an evolving language, right? We don't speak the same way they spoke 100 years ago and vice versa. It's just, that's the way language goes.
No cap.
Yeah.
No cap.
This is when I ruin anyone's respect for me. If I just were to like go on a slang rant right now.
For real, for real?
Oh, you're danker than I am. Cause I don't know that one.
The audience can't see it right now, but I just mewed.
What, dear God? Are you aware of what? Is he having a stroke? No, what happened?
I'm mewing. I was mewing.
I was lost at dank, and now I'm just fucking. Now I'm gonna play on my phone for a little.
Mike teaches the honors kids, and I have the freshmen. They're not cool. I don't know any of this.
No, you gotta look it up. Look up what mewing is, and then get back to me. It's a TikTok thing.
Oh, that's why.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or is it like InstaTok or?
I only view TikTok on my Instagram, if that's what you mean, because I'm in my mid 30s. I'm in my late 30s.
Sorry, bro, you can't pull that off anymore.
That's fine. It's okay. maybe we should just make a hard left then to the book.
I guess.
So I don't know. Do you want to have a discussion about language?
No. Well, I mean, it is part of the book in a way.
It is. This book actually taught me my new favorite word. So, of interest to me sometimes vaguely is like what we call groups of animals. And
oh, those are actually really interesting.
Right? Like a murmuration of starlings or a murder of crows.
Yep. Or a favorite. Do you guys know what they call a group of pugs?
Oh, what?
A puggle?
A grumble.
A grumble.
Fantastic.
Which is so appropriate.
A grumble of pugs.
A grumble of pugs.
What's a group of humans called?
Bunch of assholes.
Yeah, nailed it. Yeah.
A concert.
Well, so yeah, like, first of all, I was like, who gets to name these things? Like, can I be the person who names? Like, a group of otters is called the cuddle.
Oh.
Right? Group of octopuses or octopodes working together in a family unit, like, you know, like a tribe or something like that. It's called a consortium.
A consortium.
Which feels exactly right for this book.
Sounds very corporate.
Extremely rare because octopodes are very solitary.
Yes. So I thought that was also interesting that we still named what a group of them would be.
But well, there are a couple of places on the planet, like mentioned in the book, where they are found in bigger quantities, but they're still independent animals. They don't cooperate. They don't, you know.
They're just tolerating each other. It's like me and other human beings. Yeah.
I was about to say, I mean, I usually cringe when people say the phrase spirit animal, but if I were to have a spirit animal after reading this book, it might be the octopus.
See, Mike's central nervous system is actually spread out throughout his body.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's obviously what I was saying.
40% of his brain is in his limbs.
But he's good at using tools.
And I don't expect to live for another year or two.
But if you cut his arm off, it does grow back.
Yeah. He does it sometimes as a feint to distract people at work. Right. Like, oh God, my arm again. He runs away and we're all staring at the arm.
I used to try to do it as a cool party trick, but the problem is like it's extremely painful and the screaming kind of ruins
the thing. Yeah, and then the blood everywhere. Yeah. And then you ink yourself.
A lot of cleanup, you know.
That's always bad. But the arm does cool shit when it's detached. Like,
oh my gosh, yeah. It's still sentient.
Yeah, it crawls around and like sends emails to the principal.
To whom it may concern. As per my last email, and then Mike could be like, that was my fucking extra appendage. I'm sorry.
There are too many states. Please remove one.
Well, speaking of too many, this book, like I bought this book because it had kept popping up on my feeds and Goodreads was recommending it to me. And I got a good head start on you guys because I had read maybe a third of it before I said, hey, maybe for the cast. So I thought maybe we could deal with the three separate stories individually and then weave them together at the end, because otherwise it kind of can be a lot to work with. You know, you've got the hacker, you've got the slave ship. And you've got the octopuses.
All loosely connected, too, if I recall.
Yes.
Very loose.
And not to spoil it for one of our cast members. No, I can't out that. I will not out that person because I have honestly also not finished books for us.
Hey, have you guys seen this thing I can do with my arm, by the way? It's so fun.
It's got ChatGPT in the other arm. No. I will refuse to give you a hard time because we've been on break for the last week and a few days. And shit's been crazy, and life happens. This is not a job. This is what we do for fun.
Well, we got like a massive solar event happening in our backyards tomorrow.
I have multiple solar studying instruments set up as we speak.
I bought films to put over my binoculars and stuff. Yep. I got astronomical binoculars.
All I can really say that I've done is I've researched when you have to start the album Dark Side of the Moon so that Eclipse plays at peak eclipse. Ooh.
We'll I'm just going to play Black Hole Sun over and over again throughout the whole thing.
Oh, that's a good one, too.
We have a playlist set up, and my wife has timed it out. God bless her. Starts at 2 o'clock, and at 3:15, because where we live, totality begins at 3:18 in a few seconds, the final countdown starts at 3:15 to tell you you can almost take off your glasses.
Wow.
Then at 3:18, the final countdown stops. You can take off your glasses. And I forgot what song. She's got a brilliant song queued up for the totality.
It's the end of the world.
That's on the playlist. Is it really? Not that. Yeah, it's on the playlist.
Total Eclipse of the Heart has got to be in there somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. Turn around. Anyways, nobody wants to hear me sing, especially
Someone's going to listen to this cast in 2 years and be like, what the fuck are they talking about?
Dude, this eclipse is a big deal. Did you guys see the one in 2017?
No, yeah, and that was probably only a partial.
I saw it in Myrtle Beach where it was complete. I just happened to be on vacation there and it worked out. My God, you guys are in for a treat, man.
I'm looking forward to it.
Even if it's cloudy, and I really hope that the cloudy projections here are like maybe spotty and misty here and there.
They're supposed to be high level, so not as thick.
That would be fine because you can still get through that in your vision, but it is incredible. Mm-hmm. It's going to be something. So if you're going to be listening to this weeks after the eclipse has already happened, North America.
Yeah.
So assuming that civilization as we know it still exists.
Right.
Well, that's a good point. We may have lost to the octopodes actually after the solar eclipse.
Yeah, I was actually skimming an article earlier this week about all the fun conspiracy theories that people have connected to the eclipse.
My God.
I can't even.
I do love a good conspiracy theory.
I've had enough. I've had enough. I liked it when it was cute. When it was like, oh, we didn't really land on the moon. Oh, and that was it. Or JFK was killed by the FBI. Yeah. Blah, blah. That was it.
Right. They used to be occasional. On
yes. Now it's every fucking thing. Like, oh, there's a conspiracy theory for why Wegmans doesn't sell this kind of soy milk anymore. What the fuck are we doing here?
Yeah. Too much time on our hands with Dr. Google.
Man, it has to do with the kids being trafficked in that pizzeria around the corner, and Joe Biden is involved in some way. Oh my God. End of the world.
Get off the social medias. Listen to more of our podcasts.
Yes. That's where fill your time with Nerds of the Old Republic. Yes. You will be rewarded.
There are only facts set around this studio.
That's right.
Some reason I thought you were going to say only fans.
Oh.
That comes up a lot as well. Yeah, honestly, more than you'd think.
Yeah,
if you want to see pictures,
we should start one.
Do you want to see pictures of our feet?
It's not just for that anymore, guys. No. It's not just for that. But I think
ours would probably be.
Would you like to see pictures of just the tip
of my foot? Anyways, okay. So God.
Well, are we avoiding this book? What do we know?
Why are we avoiding
the book? I don't know. It's a good book. I
like
that.
I like, okay. So let's start with.
Let's return to Norman Mailer's.
Norman Mailer's The Mountain and the Consortium, which is a bunch of octopodes. All right. So let's start maybe, I guess, with what the central story would be, which is the octopodes on Kandao Island.
Right. With Ha.
With Ha.
Nguyen.
Win.
Is that how you pronounce it?
Yes.
Okay.
That's one of the few I got.
Win.
Yeah.
I thought it was Nguyen.
N-G-U-Y-E-N, unless I've been Americanizing it the whole time, which is absolutely possible.
No, I've taught students with that last name, and they have pronounced it that way, so I assume that everybody with that last name must pronounce it that way.
Win.
Definitely.
Win. Although I taught a student many years ago, this is another side tangent, I'm sorry, we can edit this out, whose name was J-O-R-G-E. And I called roll. I said, George, and I was laughed at. And I was told, it's Jorge. Haven't you ever seen his name before? Years later, I had a student, J-O-R-G-E. I read roll the first day. I said, Jorge. Everyone laughed. And I said, do you know how to read? It's spelled George.
Wow. And you're like, I don't know their family's background.
So long story short, you're both right. It is both Nguyen. Is that what you said?
I don't know. And Nguyen.
Because Viet Thanh Nguyen has written some books, and I've seen them at...
I am not fluent in Southeast Asian languages, so
this is the only one I got. So don't worry about it.
Sorry, guys.
That's okay.
I've let you down.
So Ha lands on this island to study these this community of octopodes that have generated over, we don't know how long, they hypothesize millennia.
We're not talking like handheld octopi here. We're talking like big ass motherfucking human sized octopi.
The one they call Shapes Singer is said to be Dr. Ha's size.
Yes.
So
small Vietnamese woman sized.
Yeah. 5'5", 5'6".
Oh, dude, you're giving her a lot of credit.
No, when they're
5 foot.
When they're up on their tentacles and their mantle is spread.
Okay.
They get extra tall.
They kept calling that vampire pose or something in the book, didn't they? Yeah.
Yeah. With the world's first sentient robot, AI.
Allegedly.
There's a lot there. There's a lot of philosophy.
To unpack there. Yeah.
And then this badass security officer who goes into a gel-filled ooze orb to control her.
Butt naked, my dad.
Yeah. But it gave me Ghost in the Shell vibes. Oh, yeah,
absolutely.
If you know that anime.
Well, we need to do that, by the way.
We need to Ghost in the Shell.
Yeah, we should.
So I'm seeing like Ghost in the Shell when, God, the names.
She's a Mongolian, like ex-combatant, militant, whatever.
Yeah, fought in the Winter War.
And she's like covered in scars. And so it's not sexy naked, guys. I'm sorry to tell you this.
That's fine. It doesn't all have to be sexy. Bodies can be sexy no matter what they look like.
What the hell was her name? I can't fucking remember.
I'm looking it up.
I love how she's got like this translator that is broken and she purposely uses it because she doesn't want to get close to people. That's a cool little character nod there.
Yeah.
For that, by the way, I'm getting ahead of it, but
for a while. Yeah.
Well, we're already into
it. So they're on the like independent land nation owned by a corporation.
Yes.
Dianema owns this land and it's not a nation state anymore. And they're researching this group of octopodes who they have known, they were like the monsters of Kandao. Is that what it was called?
Yeah.
The legend around it attacking humans and whatnot. And there's this really cool scientific vibe where they're just trying to like literally use the scientific method to figure out like, how do we interact with these octopodes? And I thought that story was so cool because it gets like, what's the nature of humanity? What's the nature of being alive?
Communication
between
language.
Avram and the octopuses, communication. And then there's the whole, like you said, the security officer, Altetsetsang.
Oh, Altetsetsang, yeah.
Yeah, there we go. Right?
Altetsetsang, yeah.
It's almost as if someone had buttons on their keyboard that had three letters at a time and they just hit three.
Dude, that was one of my biggest issues of the book was reading the names. Because, you know, like you probably all do this. Like you've got an inner voice that's almost like a narrator reading the book. And it's like it slows you down. You get to these fucking names, you're like, blah, 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 blah. And you feel like you're running through molasses when you're reading the name, and it's like, fuck, you're slowing me, goddamn. And I find myself like shortening it a little bit. Like Altetsetsang comes up, and it's like I can't say Altetsetsang every three fucking words, whatever. It's coming up in the thing, so I'm just like Alti as I'm reading it because I can't.
Yeah, I'm reading a Roberto Bolano book right now, and it's a lot of very Latino names, and you know, just names that I don't see around me all the time in Buffalo, New York.
Like Jorge.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Yes. And and I've been doing the same thing because there's so many characters in this book. And in my head, I have to just sort of like get a part of their name that I almost nicknamed them.
Yeah.
You know, just because, you know, like I said, like your experience informs like what your brain processes or how quickly it processes it. And
it makes me hate myself because it's like, I can't be more multicultural. What the fuck's, what am I, my dad? And it's like, it's like, I can't accept the fact that these people have different cultural, like, names and things, but I keep seeing Ha as he, and I keep seeing fucking Alten Setsang as this thing I can't read.
There's
and this is a problem with us, not with the book.
Yeah, it's all, it's clearly.
Well, and I don't, again, I don't even know if it's a problem. I mean, unless you're reading it in a negative sense, like the fuck are these names? Yeah, so, you know, like that.
Yeah,
but I don't think we are. We're just saying like people in Buffalo, New York aren't named this. So, so for us, like those names are not like, it's not like having like a clearly named like Frank and Susan, you know, like. Names that we've heard a thousand times and we recognize as names. And there's a conversation sort of parallel to this early in the book that, Ha has with herself, like an interior monologue when she first meets the, is it an android? Is that the right word?
We use Avram. Avram.
Yeah. When she first meets Avram and she doesn't quite know how to classify the gender. And then she finds herself getting frustrated with herself because she's like, I have this limited understanding of, like, you know, to me, I have these words that I sort of default to, and she finds herself getting frustrated with that.
Well, our thoughts are shaped by our language, which is also a context in the book.
She literally comes out and says that.
Yes.
And then there's that is also used as a parallel to her trying to interact with the octopodes, which is the, you know, again, and she continually in those really neat little like segments that were in between chapters of like parts of a book she wrote, where it's like a textbook or whatever. And it's like the, how do you communicate with something that is so alien that has no concept of the way you think or act or interact with the world and you, all of this stuff, how do you find common ground and all? And it's really, I mean, it, again, like any good fiction, it's a reflection of what we are as humans and how we feel.
I kind of half expected this book to turn more Lovecraftian than it was. Mm. Not because of the obvious thing, not because of like the octopus tentacles. Yeah, exactly. But because of what you just said, it's so much about like, you know, Lovecraft is about exactly that. The humans coming up against something that is so fundamentally different and alien to them.
It doesn't conform to any known Euclidean geometry.
Did you come up with that all by yourself? That's brilliant.
Whoa, that's genius. You can have half a bell.
So anyways, between the tentacles and the Euclidean geometry, I kept thinking, you know, that this book was going to be like, oh, this is very Lovecraftian, but it never really did, which I think is to its credit.
Yeah.
Yeah. It could have turned easily into a trope.
Yeah.
You know, if we're sticking with one storyline at a time, if we're talking about the octopodes, we've skipped a lot, but after they figure or they try, they think they figured out some of the Shapesinger language, and then they get attacked at the end. They could have easily turned Lovecraftian or even worse, M. Night Shyamalan.
Oh, yeah.
Fuck that guy. I'm going to be him right now. Do not like his movies. Done.
Except for Sixth Sense. That's a good one.
Signs was good
that one?
You got one watch of Sixth Sense, and then it was done. Which is fine.
Disagree.
It was fine.
Signs was good up until the last 5 minutes.
Which was the one where the trees are the ones making people kill themselves?
Don't even watch it.
That was maybe the dumbest thing I've ever seen.
I saw Sixth Sense and Signs.
Unbreakable's okay.
Sure.
Is Signs the one
we found Adam's line?
This is, yes. Sure. It's right there.
Yeah, so Sean is a booming, fuck you! And Adam is a very passive aggressive, sure.
As per my last negative comment, sure. Yeah, I am nothing That's but awesome. A bureaucrat. That's why I love Kafka.
Adam filed that paperwork and then he duplicated it.
I passive aggressively filed it late and put it in your inbox after your time at the office was over.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you, Franz.
So, yeah, I appreciate that it didn't turn on too many tropes, actually.
No.
I expected, you know, you could have had a war with the octopodes. You could have the drones come in and obliviate them because we don't like things we don't understand. And Altet Setsang could have, like, wrecked everything. Avram could have decided to join the Octopodes, which would have been like, I'm not a human, I'm going out to the sea. Right.
Or Avram himself could have been very tropey. I mean, he could have been Data from Star Trek. You know, but I thought that that was an interesting treatment of that type of character in this book.
Put a pin in that for a quick second.
Sure.
Because just kind of getting back to like the, just the general context stuff, I think it's really interesting what he did here. Like that whole we were talking about our cultural context and things like that. And I love the way, and it had to be deliberate, the deconstruction of world geopolitics in this book.
I was going to get to that when we talked about Rutsum, but.
Well, we'll lay the groundwork here. Just the groundwork.
Yeah.
Just
because I like that.
Yeah. Oh, it's near future. It's it's definitely like, I'd say within 50 years, kind of like sort of generalism, maybe within a 50 to 100 years of now. And it that idea that the post-American imperial time is over, like America doesn't even exist really as it is now.
They don't talk about it at all.
Right. There's a lot of different things like the like Russian Federation stuff and like different things, blocks have come up. And
Tibet is a power player.
Yes. Like,
love it.
A lot of really neat flipping of the current map and the like sort of like he barely brushes it. It's like, again, it's like texture in the background of a Renaissance painting, right? Like the stuff that you don't really pay attention to, but it's really important because it backgrounds everything that stands out to you. It's just a really neat way to see like potentiality there. And it's really cool because everything he brings up feels real. It feels like this could really happen. Like that's the way history could really go. Corporations basically run and own everything. Well, I mean, it's the way it is now.
I mean, yeah, it is.
But just much more overt. Obvious. Yeah. More overt in the future. And the weakening of nation states and things like that, and others coming into power using corporate leverage and stuff like that. Just, I thought that was awesome.
Yeah. I love a good political intrigue until it comes too close to the real world. And then I don't like it because I already don't like it.
Yeah. Like Handmaid's Tale.
Like good for you, Margaret Atwood. Thank you for holding a mirror up to 2020 through 2016 through 2024, whenever they got rid of Roe. But, in any case, yeah, I thought that was super cool. And there's a lot to talk about with that other thread of, was it Rostam. There we go, Rostam.
I think that's right.
And as we're talking about names and whatnot, it occurs to me that they're probably even harder to pin down because of the non-current map that they're working with.
Right.
Like nation states have blended further. So people, even if they kept like the same names throughout their family's lineage, are now blending with other people from other places, and they're like choosing different combinations of their names.
Like he would be Russian, I think, if we were to call him like by today's standards.
Today, yeah.
I think Ha is probably the only one who actually exists within a political boundary that we can say. Because
America, right?
No, she's Vietnamese.
Well, she but I thought she did her time. I thought she did her academic work in America.
She might have done in like one of the like I think it was like one of the, like the Western conglomerate or something like that. Mm. But she is Vietnamese, like born and raised. Like she was on the playground where she spent most of her days. Mm-hmm. But she, sorry, I couldn't help it.
In the tiger cage.
Yeah. Well, yeah, she was an orphan, and again, what's really neat again about his ability to blend in that post Vietnam War. And for us, it's the Vietnam War, but I think for them, it's probably like the revolution.
Yeah.
And this idea of like what the like Vietnam becomes. And if you notice like where things are tracking now, even Vietnam is starting to become kind of a with the ascension of China as a powerhouse in the East. Vietnam is kind of coming right along with it in a way, which is fascinating, but just the legacy of the horrors of the war and the tiger cage thing and the orphans and all that. So it can't be that far in the future if she's an orphan of that, excuse me, of that time period, right? Like,
yeah, it really can't. I mean, I wouldn't expect it to be more than 20 years from now.
Maybe that close. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So like I assumed it was either an alternate future or a very near future. And the reviews I read said near future.
Okay.
But, you know, we bring to it what we want.
There's a couple of like technological feats besides Avram that kind of like to me painted it as maybe alternate, almost like the Marvel universe is where it feels like, oh, it's like today, but they've got a lot more technology, you know, like that. I mean, kind
the
of
ghost
thing.
In the shell gel that Altetzet saying hangs out in.
That. And there's like the Ablance or whatever that woman wears that obscures her face. And it's like there's things in that. It's like that feels Blade Runner-y. Like, there's some stuff in there that's very, like, steampunk. Not steampunk, I'm sorry. Wow.
No, definitely not steampunk.
Cyberpunk.
Yeah.
Yes, we should do some steampunk. Anyway.
Well, we got one. We got an author.
Oh, yeah. You're right. Whose name I'm blanking on at the moment, and the book as well.
It's cast, too, and this is a 10%.
Yes, yes. Loves me some steampunk, but cyberpunk elements, which we are going next with Neuromancer.
We're going back in the day.
Now, that is the OG, right?
All you 20 nerd subscribers out there, get ready for it. Anyway. I forgot where I was going with it.
The lady's face is the last thing you saw. That was one of the striking images to me early in the book, was that it was like a swarm of bees or some shit.
Mm-hmm. It's always changing.
But he didn't do it in a way where, like, he clearly described, like, well, she's wearing this, like, helmet thing.
And
Like, it was sort of like her face, like, flickered, and you're like, if it made you pause and think about what you were reading and try to visualize that.
I had to reread, which I thought was nice. Quite a few things because of that.
Yeah. And, I mean, I thought a lot of the shit was, like, very well done. Even moments when I wanted to be cynical, there's a moment where they're describing the guy who was with his friend and the octopus murdered his friend. Right. Mm. You remember that scene? It was one of those, like, interlude things in the middle.
Like, interviewing him?
Yeah.
Yeah. And before we actually got to
see, like, he went to prison, but then they, like, let him out or whatever. And but then it goes, there was one detail that he never told anybody. And that was that he found, like, the seashell was carved like a knife.
Yeah.
And I was like, I went into cynical mode. I'm like, what the fuck? Like, that's proof. That's evidence. Like, why wouldn't it? And then the book went on to say, like, why he did that was because he thought that would be so ridiculous to people he was telling it to that they would think for sure that was proof that he did it and he was scrambling to come. And anyways, that was another one of those moments too, where I was like, all right, that was nicely done. This, like, weird ass thing where an octopus walks down the beach and kills a guy.
Yeah.
And, like, he manages to describe it and explain it away. That was, you know, the verisimilitude worked for me. I bought it.
Yeah. So, you know, I did a little bit of reading on Ray Naylor, and he worked for the Peace Corps and was basically like a diplomat, like a side corps diplomat. And so I think that kind of fills in a lot of his understanding of human nature and the geopolitics that we're talking about. So that was really cool, because oftentimes you get a scientist who moonlights as a fiction writer. Nothing against that.
Right.
But I think this lends a different take on humanity. You know, we can talk real quick about Evrim before we move on to either Rustum or the slave ship. But
real quick point on the author, though. This dude, this is his first book, right?
I need to double check.
I believe that's his debut novel. And this dude got some fucking awesome, like, go ahead. Did you seem like you found something?
Well, I was just going to say Nebula in 2022, Locus in 2022, LA Times Book Prize nominee for Bradbury Prize in 2023.
For this book?
For this book.
Okay.
Kitch's nominee for Golden Tentacle.
That's a prestigious one.
2023.
Golden Tentacle.
It sounds like one of those, like, Japanese porn things or something.
Yes, it does.
That's bukkake.
No, that's not bukkake. That's hentai.
I know. I'm just trying.
I think this was this guy's first book, and I'm going to continue insisting unless you
as
find
as far as I can tell, you're correct.
But he had some fucking serious props in there on his brag page, including David Mitchell, who wrote many good books, but most notably Cloud Atlas, which I think is a modern masterpiece.
It's on my must-read list this summer.
Oh, it's so fucking good. It's so fucking good. And the other one that was on there that impressed me was Jeff Vandermeer. I don't know if you guys can see that big-ass white book up there, but that guy has written some seriously good shit, and he wrote the book Annihilation, that movie that we watched recently. He's really good too. And there were some other notable names in there, but anyways, I'm like, damn, for a debut novelist, this guy had some serious heavy hitters propping his book up.
I just wanted to touch on Evrim for a second.
We
are, you know, reading a sci-fi book. Well, I mean, near future sort of book. So Evrim, allegedly sentient android. And there's a lot of near the end, the last like third of the book, is whether or not he's actually sentient. Yeah,
there's some question of that.
And I loved how they dealt with, like, the concept of building an AI android through neural mapping and, like, taking people's brains, like, lived experiences, mashing them together, making as many, like, like a large language model, like you make an AI now, feed it as many brains as possible, and then you'll get a brain.
Right. He's basically an embodiment of ChatGPT in the future, like what it would be.
It's, perfect memory recall. Oh, but
it's a curse almost, too, the way they describe it.
Yeah.
And I love that he's or it's aware of what it is, right? Apparently, allegedly, right? But then again, the creator there at the end saying how
I can't even attempt that name.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
That just basically saying that, no, it passed the Turing test. That's what it did because it was designed to do that. It doesn't mean it's sentient. Like,
right.
Like
and I love how it questioned the Turing test.
Yeah.
It wasn't because that's been the gold standard for whether or not something is alive.
Right.
Forever.
Right.
Do you think it's alive while you're talking to it? And they do the interviews where he's like talking and they're like, well, you passed or whatever. But then there's also that, what is that program that Dr. Ha talks
The 0.5.
The 0.5.
They've all got those things.
Which is like your emotional support AI.
I think that's an awesome
offload to.
They're already doing that. Snapchat already has this.
Seriously?
It has a virtual friend. My students have been talking about this. Like that like talks to you, it chats with you, it suggests things to you, it answers questions, it asks how you're doing. It's legitimately what he came up with here in this book is happening with these virtual reality friends instead of fake friends or whatever, or like imaginary friends.
So here's my issue with that. And it's the exact same issue that Ha had. It's an empty repeat relationship.
Right.
You know the patterns. It's like comfort watching friends.
Yeah.
You know what you're going to get.
It's empty calories.
It's empty. And I think she uses a similar analogy at one point. No, thank you.
Right. There's no fulfillment because it is exactly what you want it to be. Mm-hmm. It's super sophisticated. It's modeled on a real human brain map, like that idea, but it can't innovate. It can only iterate. Mm-hmm. Right. I guess that's the best way to put it.
I think she says that exactly at one point. I'm trying to find the doctor's name who makes the brains.
Minotaur or something like Minotaur. It's some like Icelandic / Chinese name, right? Yep. Isn't it like some interesting fusion like that?
I'm looking for one of the prefaces to age.
Oh, I don't have the book. Does anybody have the book with them?
I have. Well, I read it digitally.
There it is.
So that's why I'm swiping through my. Sorry, I'm not looking through Snapchat.
That doctor character was a fascinating figure too, though.
Dr. Arnkaltla Minervatoire Chan.
Chan.
And I'm not just saying that because I'm drunk. I'm trying to sound it out.
Let me see that.
I am drunk.
Let me see if I can give it the old college pronunciation. Oh, dear Lord. Right? How small is that?
Well, I'm sorry. That's how I. So I don't need readers yet, but I will soon.
Arnkaltla Minervu Dotter Chan.
Well, that's very good.
It's the Minervu Dotter, which means it's the daughter of Minervu in Iceland and Arnkatla and then Chan. Yeah. So Arnkatla
is like Eastern European, right?
Arnkatla?
Or is that still Northern European?
It might still be some sort of Swedish kind of thing. Minervu Dotter Chan.
I was intrigued by that character, though, as like the Dr. Frankenstein.
Yeah, essentially.
Right? Like they built this thing that is not wanted anywhere. It's literally kicked off of every space on Earth except for Kandao, because Kandao is not a country.
Does our one person in the cast who may or may not have finished it know what happens to that character?
It's okay.
May or may not know.
How far do we go with this?
I'm not at liberty to discuss whether or not I know. I've literally played this role, Mike. I understand how weird it is. I get it. Do you want us to talk about this?
No, please.
It doesn't bother you at all?
No. It was my fault for coming up just short.
You were on a lovely vacation.
And I want to throw in here, too, that like, because I know there was one other book in our cast history that I quit on like, I had to take a moral stance and quit on that.
You and I both quit on that one.
We both did. Yes. And this was not that. I was enjoying this book very much. I actually will likely finish it still. And I'm impressed with this author. I can't wait to see what the author does.
Without throwing it away too much. I just feel like, again, Naylor is doing a really good job of I don't want to say subverting expectations, but like there's reality and there's this, you know, like it plays into a sort of like, oh, it doesn't really react to the way I see a fictional text going, but actually, honestly, that feels pretty real. Like what happens to this character, what happens to everyone, what happens to Ha, what happens to the guy on the boat. Can't think of that dude's name.
We'll come back.
Yeah.
Son and...
Son, yeah, that's it. And like the dude narrating the whole part of it, but...
Yeah.
But that, all of it feels like real, like yep. to a point where it's still very interesting, but I didn't need to be like forced a typical three-act story kind of like, oh, this could be a movie, like the kind of thing. Like that's how it seems like a lot of books these days are written.
Because you know if this is going to be a movie, they're going to focus on Altatzet saying...
Yeah, exactly.
Unfortunately. And the slave ship will get more time than it should.
Mm. Right.
Rutsum will turn into Neo from the Matrix.
Right. And it's going to ignore like all the cool, like philosophical with the auto monks and like that kind of stuff.
Yeah, we're going to get to that with, I figured we would tie that to the slave ship because of how it wraps up.
Right. But it felt a little bit more of like a, how do I put it? A counter sort of story, but not stereotypical.
Yeah. I just wanted to follow up. This is his first book.
Yeah.
He has written other stories, like short stories.
But this was his debut novel.
And he fucking crushed it.
Yeah, I really felt that. And also, I don't remember which one of you two I said this to before I started reading it, but when the book showed up and I was first looking at it, I was like, oh, dude, like it was like David Mitchell right on the cover, and then like you open it up and you're like, oh, it's fucking Jeff Vandermeer, and I think there were some other names in there that I'd have to see the book to remember, but it was like damn this book got seriously prepped. I thought, you know, this is sort of connected to the point you were just making, Sean, about like the philosophy and the action. There've been books that I've been disappointed with in the past because we did Termination Shock, which I have around here somewhere, somewhat recently. And it was like, dude, this was like, you know, this was just one where like the ideas, it's all it was ideas. Like there was no plot, there was no narrative. And, you know, just from reading about the book going into it, you know, there was that little voice in my head that was like, this sounds like it could be, you know, it could get bogged down in the ideas. This sounds very philosophical. It's, you know, it's very much about like the environment, ecology, and like human nature, and also communication. There's that whole sort of, if you've seen Arrival aspect to it, like how do you communicate with
right
something that's so alien, you know? But it didn't get bogged down in the ideas. Mm-hmm. The ideas were great. They were there. They were up front. I mean, this wasn't like a subtle novel where you had to like tease out what it was exploring. Yeah. But it never felt like it came at the expense of the story and the characters.
Yeah. That's a good way of saying it. I was really impressed because I felt like a lot of those ruminations came between Iko on the ship. I had to look it up. Found it. or Dr. Ha, who are kind of like the two main voices. Like Rutsum gets a voice, but he's more like reacting to the world around him.
Right.
Which is also an interesting thing.
Now that you mentioned him,
can shift over to him.
He's kind of like almost an interesting human character because he's more of like an analog for an AI. Then if you think about like the way that his affect is, he can see things in the machine programming that other people can't. He's almost got like this deeper connection. You almost get the feeling he's autistic in a way.
I was 100% he's on the spectrum.
Yeah.
Which I thought was a nice way of maybe writing a different than neurotypical character without being like, look, this one's got autism. Exactly. Here's your standard.
It wasn't slapping you in the face, but he had like that sexual relationship with that. A real person, I'm assuming, because she gets killed.
Yeah. But he treats her as such.
Yeah. But he like feels something for her and like what happens to her and just like what he's trying to do with trying to hack Evrim's brain and all that stuff. I think he's a deeply fascinating character in that whole Ablance.
A-B-L-A-N-G.
Isn't there a G in there? Ablance.
It's next to an N.
Yeah. That whole like then that's like basically like PETA in the future. Like it's
Yeah. Well, and you also debate like, are they also part of the Tibetan Republic?
Yeah, because it's weird.
The Buddhist Republic of Tibet is a strong hand in this whole thing. They've got the best drones.
Yeah.
They're known for controlling and preserving areas of the world in like a really respectful way with their auto monks. Like at first you think the auto monks are a joke because they're introduced by Ha as these really dumb robots. Right. They tend to the garden. They tend to the sand. They tend to the temple.
It's just like a facsimile of an actual monk's memories.
Yeah, that's literally what they are. Is they're a copy of a real monk who lived. But then you find out they've got this badass technology. Mm-hmm. And sorry, Mike. In the end, they take over Dianima through like a corporate takeover, which means they own Khan Dao, and they kick Dr. Chan out.
Yeah.
They lock her out of her own business in a very, what is it? Engine number 9. Is that the activist group that like corporate takes over through stock purchases?
Well, it's basically it's a hostile takeover. She knows it's happening. That's why she came to the island anyway, was to try and
she knew it was over.
Yeah. She basically wanted to reconnect with Evrim, and I don't know, maybe it was a mother daughter or mother child kind of thing. But that whole thing with the auto monks and Tibet was deeply fascinating. Yeah. And then the Alten Setsang sort of like heel turn almost, where you're like, what?
Yeah, the double agent move in the last chapter.
That was super cool.
Worth reading still.
Yeah.
Another member of the cast.
I was thinking to myself, as you guys are talking, is like, I mean, this is really, complex. What this, debut novelist was able to pack into it.
I'm so jealous.
A book, and it looks like when you get the book, it looks like it's like, oh, this is a fucking tome right here, but it's really not, because the chapters are also short. You know what I mean? So if the chapters were longer, it might be like a typical 320 page novel or something like that. Yeah. And what he's able to do, all these different fucking things you guys are talking about, on top of just the ideas and the philosophy. And to me, one of the most interesting parts was like every chapter starting with Dr. Ha saying, it was from her book or whatever. And it was like some really profound thing about like how organisms communicate or something like that. Like those were some of the most interesting parts. I mean, he really crammed a lot into this, and it doesn't read like that. It doesn't read like textbooky or anything.
Yeah. It's very impressive. That was, in reading his biography, was inspired by an actual book. How forests think. So not about the ocean, but how forests think.
Okay. I've heard of that
book. You can buy that book.
Yeah, I've heard of that one.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, seriously.
There's too much, I think, for us to cast on in this book. Yeah. There's just like so much going on with the octopodes and the skin ink communication stuff.
We haven't even touched on Shapesinger. I know.
Like there's like a whole culture he develops for octopodes. Horses.
Don't do it. Damn it. Damn it. I'm cringing.
I feel it's just fine. We could go on for another kid. Yeah. It's just, which is so much.
Not unheard of, but rare in a debut author.
Right.
For sure.
No, I think, if anything, dear listeners, you need to read this book, because, I mean, it's, we can't give it the full like treatment in it. Yeah. And I don't want to like waste your whole drive time on us just like teasing you or cock teasing you here with it, but it's, there's a lot going on here.
It'll be interesting to see where the author's career goes, because I was reminded a lot of Neal Stephenson, who we've done a couple of books from. And, I mean, where we're sitting is a good example of like, I have shitty Neal Stephenson down here. Like there's one.
It's below.
There's one. And I think I have another one on the shelf up there. Yep. And those are the ones that don't make the good shelf upstairs where the company comes. Where I have about 6 or 7 Neal Stephenson books next to each other.
Proves that he has good taste in literature.
Exactly. But, my point being, I was reading this and I was like, the way that this author tells a story jam packs ideas that he wants to explore in the story, and does it all in a very accessible way where you could be very knowledgeable about this shit, or you could just be someone looking for a beach read and still enjoy it. Reminded me in many ways of Neal Stephenson. So I'd be very curious to see where the author goes from here. Is every book going to maintain this, or, I don't know. I don't know, but very promising just from what I've read so far.
That's high praise.
Yeah. It's a good way to put
it. We don't just call people Neal Stephenson-esque without reason. But yeah, I agree. Yeah. Ray Naylor, please keep writing. Please keep writing like this. Because, it was worth it. We haven't even touched on the hacker Rustum very much.
Rustum is just, I don't know if we're saying the name right, but.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Is it Rustum? Rustum?
I think it's Rustum.
I don't fucking know.
We're 2 casts in. I'm 3 drinks in.
Yeah.
I may have had 4.
We talked a little bit about it. Just the fact that he's trying to, like, backdoor find a way to break into an AI's, like, brain and stuff. I mean, it's
like hacking ChatGPT if they were in a physical body.
Right. And again, he's almost like a corporate raider and like that whole thing. I feel like if I was going to criticize this book, I would have to criticize it being almost too full. It's too packed. There's too many disparate ideas that he's trying to like weave together. And there is a loose weaving.
Sure.
Through
loosening of the narrative thread. The
yeah. Weaving. Thank you. Through
my M. Night Shyamalan.
Yes.
Fuck you.
Oh my
Night
God.
Shyamalan. Fuck
thank
you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I got I think Evrim is probably the central pin on the way that all three of the stories like sort of hover around. Right. Cause you've got Rustam's like trying to get into his head
and freeing him in the end.
Yes.
He had a loophole that even Evrim didn't know about.
Yeah. He gifts him the, like, no one's going to mess with you ever again,
yeah.
Which is pretty sweet.
You close your port data.
Yes. There's the slave ship guy who he barely even touched on with like the AI ship that like, there's a mutiny.
Yeah.
There's an AI ship that like basically kills people because it like just needs to fish. There's like ecological yeah. disaster. There's again,
literally human trafficking yes. to keep a slave ship going.
Yeah.
And it's run by mercenaries and an AI cap, like an AI room.
Yeah.
They keep talking about it locked behind a steel door.
And that whole like the philosophical nightmare when they sink the ship and it's like, is that thing going to like live forever on the floor of the ocean? Like,
yes.
Like,
is the AI going to just drown yeah, and live on forever and know that we killed it?
He's almost got like 10 pounds of stuff packed into a 5-pound bag. At some point you're like, man, I could have had three different books here.
Really could have.
Because if you think about it, the only thing that unites them is the connection to Evrim because of the AI stuff with the slave ship. Right. And how the guy washes up on the beach, which again has almost nothing to do with
randomly
the octopus
washes up.
Right.
Yeah.
Nothing to do with anything else that maybe that Elton Setzing is the one that blew up their ship or whatever. I don't know.
He is. Yeah.
Yeah.
So they purposely Sun knew that Khandao was under the protectorate of Diana.
Yeah.
And so he drove the ship like he lied to the ship to
yeah.
trick the AI and was like, oh, Khandao has got some
that's
famous
right, that's right, yeah.
shipping lane or famous fishing lanes. And the ship took the bait.
Right.
And went into it. And he was like, oh, we're going to get blasted. Like, get down, stay down. And
right.
So you see that last scene on the ship where they're like, it's like Titanic. Like, Sun knows it's going down. Iko doesn't know until Sun fills them in, sort right. of.
That's where I was going with this. Yeah. My criticism.
There you go.
It felt like the like that storyline didn't quite jibe too well with what was going on with Ha and Evrim and Rostam's whole thing. Like, that almost was like, where's the metaphorical parallelism? Like, where's I got to dig too hard. I felt like to make that all like jam together.
I could English teacher that shit if you. Need
we could. Yeah, we yeah. could totally sit there and be like, well, blah blah blah, and draw a fucking brain
the lack
map.
Of freedom of man,
yeah,
and
I mean,
the choice. You're beholden to your choices, man. But do you really have a choice, man?
But if I got to work too hard for it,
yeah,
then I got to say that that's it's not successful in that regard.
That was a little bit of like Deus Ex Machina with the ship coming in and solving the problem.
Right.
Right. Because that's what Altet said, saying blew it up,
mm-hmm.
solved the problem for Iko and Sun. Well, for Iko.
Yeah. Well,
and
yeah.
I'll never let go.
Yeah. Well, then Sun survived, didn't he? Didn't they say something about it in the end?
Did.
I thought that they said he was still alive.
It was a rush job on my part.
Yeah. Well, I also kind of like, but I do think like, again, trying to resolve everything quickly is at a detriment to the novel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I read it digitally, so I don't have a sense for how thick this book would have been. And there's already been a few versions of it as you look online. But like the one I read was, let me pull it up, the Kindle version, because I had so many Kindle credits. Speaking of corporate taking over the world.
Thank you, Amazon.
Yeah. Yeah. But I had like $7 a credit. It was like $1.99 when I bought it. Give me something besides a percentage. Never mind. I can't right now get besides a percentage, but was it like 300? Mike, you had a physical book, right?
Yes.
Well,
how many pages?
Roughly.
It was less than, it was like 560-ish or
okay.
something.
I have to stop many? Picking books that long.
What's that?
I don't remember it being that long.
And we can check afterwards. I have the book upstairs, but it was around 500.
I got it at the library.
I got to stop picking these books, man. Between this and Walk Away was like 475.
Yeah, but like I said, I hasten to add with this one was that it feels in the hand longer than it reads.
Yeah, I agree.
It's got very short chapters, so and it actually moves along pretty quick.
It's philosophically dense, but the word choice is not overbearing.
Oh, no. If we are going to lob criticisms, mine was going to be, and mine is often this, but I didn't think the prose was very good. I felt it was very, I find this, you know, increasingly a criticism I have with modern science fiction or fantasy is that it's written at a young adult level. I'm not looking for Tolkien, right? I don't mean that. I don't mean I need it to be super literary, but I just mean it feels like as I'm reading it, I'm like, this feels like it's written for like a 14-year-old audience. Not in the terms of the ideas, the narrative, the character, the content, but just the language. So if I had any criticism for what I read, it would be the prose. But I don't think that's a strong criticism or an uncommon one for me. That's just me as a reader.
Well, at least it's not a sex scene in Doctor O. Yeah. Which, don't get me wrong, I love me some Doctor O.
Suck those toes.
When I looked at them and I asked, can I suck your toes?
What was the word?
Like, they asked for consent. Thank God.
Pop. Was it labia? What was the fucking word?
No, they
word?
Definitely used labia.
Yeah.
Pop the toe into his mouth.
For
pop.
Sure.
Yes, that
pop the toe in the mouth as he like fondled or something her labia.
Oh,
their like, labia.
Oh,
yeah.
I'm not a prude, but this is like too clinical.
Yeah. You could judge a good, a well-written sex scene should make you tingle a little bit.
Right.
Not cringe.
Pop the toe in her mouth.
I felt like I was putting on the rubber gloves.
He popped the toe in her mouth.
Yeah.
Before he even kissed her. Which he said like three times. Like that was like the big thing. Like, oh, he did that before he even kissed her. It's like, is that like the author's big turn on?
He ran the tip of his nose around her areola three times clockwise.
That might be actually verbatim from the novel. Not from Ray Naylor. Ray Naylor had no sex.
No, you're right.
Ray, maybe give it a thought next time.
Yeah, especially with all those.
I don't need to be titillated, but still.
Especially with all those tentacles in the book.
If we're going to wind it down, it feels like it's winding down. It's a debut novel.
Yeah.
More, please.
Yeah.
Thank absolutely. You, Ray Naylor. That was impressed. Great. Yes.
Very impressed.
Norman Mailer, too, but Ray Naylor, for sure. Write some more books.
Maybe change your pen name. So you're a little more separated from Norman Mailer.
Yeah.
Mike, what do you think?
Like I said before, it's what I read. I enjoyed very much. I think in terms of pacing and the narrative, didn't get too bogged down by the ideas, but the ideas were still very thoroughly explored. I enjoyed it very much. And it's even more interesting, like hearing you guys talk about the stuff that I haven't read yet. I'm sitting here appreciating like just how dense and like three-dimensional of a world that he built here. And I'm very impressed with it, and it's definitely an author that I will keep track of. So I recommend this book and whatever he comes out with next, we might even consider doing, you know, a second cast.
Yeah. He's got some short stories.
Yeah.
We could grab some short stories, each take one.
Absolutely.
A little bit of read, but yeah, I feel the same way. Like I'm looking forward to whatever they write next. I mean, knowing that we have Cloud Atlas now coming up on the horizon, I better start on Cloud Atlas.
That's such a good book.
First though, I got to get to Neuromancer. But
stick with us, nerds.
You know, yeah, stay with us. We've got some great nerdy shit coming up. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we tend to do our longer books over the summer being teachers. So, like, you know, Cloud Atlas is now a thing. We've made it so.
Make it so.
I will say that Cloud Atlas reads, being a much longer book, it reads a lot faster than Neuromancer.
Yeah.
Neuromancer, unless maybe you're well-versed in that technology. I am not. So I spend a lot of time in this book trying to like figure out what the fuck they're talking about technology-wise. So Cloud Atlas is not as intimidating as the length would seem to indicate.
Mm, okay. That's good to know. Because I think that's why I keep putting it off.
Yeah.
It's on my to-be-read list, but
right.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not even that long. It's like 500-some pages. It's not like it's Infinite five. Jest or something.
Yeah. Well, now we can also guarantee that at least one of us has finished these books, too.
Oh, man, would you quit picking on Mike? This is the one recently that he has not finished.
He finished these.
I've read Neuromancer twice, and I've read Cloud Atlas, I think, twice, at least once.
I've got nothing.
I'm good.
Yeah. That's why he suggested Cloud Atlas. He's got it.
He's chilling, yo. Yeah. He's got this.
No cap to bring it full circle. All right. Well, I hope you enjoyed today's cast. We are going to be reading Neuromancer next by William Gibson. Pick yourself up a copy. Give yourself time, as Mike says. It is denser than it looks, despite its size, depending on the publication you get. So we'll be back with Neuromancer, and who knows after that. thank you for hanging out with us, dear nerds. We hope you stay nerdy and that you have a drink in your hand. So cheers.
Cheers.